Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Today's show is brought to you by Markham Search, a leader in executive search staffing throughout the United States. Today on the show, we have with us Derek Levasseur. Derek first entered the world of crime fighting and now channels years on the street into his new how-to book on communicating more effectively. Derek is a decorated police sergeant from Central Falls, Rhode Island. Before becoming a supervisor, he was assigned to the investigative division, where he spent 3 years as an undercover detective. Through his life experiences, both personal and professional, Derek has developed an innovative approach to building stronger relationships and achieving personal goals. He used that same approach on the CBS hit series, Big Brother, and is now regarded as one of the greatest to have ever played. Derek also starred in the investigative discovery hit docuseries, Is O.J. Innocent? The Missing Evidence, a show that gave viewers a firsthand look at his investigative methods and approaches to interpersonal communication. Derek, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Jennifer. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have you on the show and to get to talk about your new book, The Undercover Edge, your new television show coming out. So why don't we start a little bit just so our listeners can get to know you? Why don't you tell us a little bit about how you became a detective and went on to be the best player ever on Big Brother?
It's so funny that they're completely not, they're separate, but in a way they kind of do share some things. As far as being a police officer, I was in college. I was 18 years old. Going for criminal justice, was playing baseball. And after my sophomore year, I came home for the summer and I had known the chief because I was kind of a troubled kid growing up. So he knew my name and we had crossed paths and he said, listen, you know, we're taking applications for the police department. I know you're only 20, but if you're taking criminal justice, it might be a good opportunity to get some exposure to the process so that when you actually do get, you know, ready to, you know, work for us or work for another department, you'll have some experience. And I said, all right, cool. So I took the exam and I took the physical exam. And about 2 weeks later, while I was home on summer break, I get a call from him. He goes, hey, can you come by the police station? Go by the police station. Now, mind you, there's about 300 people who took this exam to, you know, for five spots. And he says, well, listen, Derek, I kind of have a conundrum here. You finished first on everything. So, as much as I didn't expect, this, I really can't pass over you when you finish first if I don't have a just cause. So I think you're ready based on what I'm seeing here. And I want to offer you the job, but just don't make a fool out of me. And I said, I have to think about it because I didn't expect this. And yeah, and so I went home. And I was a college kid who was broke and was going to school for criminal justice anyways. And it didn't look like I was going to play professional baseball. So I took the job. And so I was one of the youngest police officers in the history of my department. And I was only 20 years old. So you can imagine I was not only 20, but I looked very young. So early on, I got the opportunity because of my, you know, my ability to communicate with people because I knew the city and also my looks, I got the opportunity to work undercover at 21 years old. My first undercover operation was actually on my 21st birthday. And wow. the irony of the whole undercover op is I just told you I left college to be a cop. And my first undercover case was me actually living at a college as a college student. And we ended up arresting 11 people because of the drugs I was able to find within the school. But the irony was sitting in that dorm room playing Madden with all these college kids undercover when this is what I just left. And let's just say I was very good at beer pong. We'll just put it that way. So I blended right in and I was hooked. I was absolutely hooked. And I got to do homicide investigations, child molestation, everything, the whole spectrum, the whole gamut of what you would do as an investigator. And I did that for a few years. And I always liked the show Big Brother, right? And the reason I liked it was because when you're working undercover, you can't really go out. You can't really be out in the public, especially if you have children or a wife, because you may run into someone who knows you from another life, right? Mm. So you try to stay away from those situations. And so I would watch a lot of TV and watch movies and hang out. And, you know, I wasn't a recluse, but I kept to myself. And I always was fascinated by this show Big Brother because it was kind of a representation of what I was doing. These people were going into this social experiment and they were trying to build relationships with the people around them. Although it was very difficult, the person who did it the best usually won the money. And I always said to my wife, if I did the show, I would crush it. I would absolutely crush it, because for your listeners that don't know what Big Brother is, the macro, you know, looking at it from a macro level, you would say it's a reality show, and that's not wrong. But if you break down what it actually entails, I think it's a lot more than that. You know, think about this environment, this definition, right? You go into an environment, you're put around a bunch of people, different ages, different ethnicities, different religions, different beliefs, different motivations. And your objective is to find commonalities with these people, work with some of them, and ultimately accomplish the team and personal goals that you set for yourself. And if you think about just that definition, it sounds a lot like something else, work. Right? It's the same setting. When you go to work, you don't get to choose the people you're surrounded by. It's your responsibility as a leader or as an employee to adapt to the situation to make it advantageous for you and the organization. And the same thing applies to life as well. So I wanted to go in there and prove to myself that this approach that I've developed from not only my personal experiences, but also my professional experiences and some of the training I received while working undercover. I was fortunate enough to work for the FBI, DEA, ATF, and I got enhanced training in human behavior and interrogation techniques. And I wanted to show people that I could apply these same methods in this this controlled social experiment that had nothing to do with law enforcement and be just as effective. So when I turned 30, I applied. It was a bucket list thing. I was out of undercover. I went on the show and I stuck to the game plan the whole time. And I was able to win the show, win the, you know, $575,000. And now I have the respect of the BB community as far as, play is concerned. So as a fan of the show, it was a big step up from what I was doing, but it all worked out, you know?
That's extraordinary. So what do you think? I get that it sounds like you applied your undercover principles on the show. What principles, whether you're undercover on a show like Big Brother or in life and work, do you think make you most successful?
Well, there's a lot of different things that you can do that are just commonsensical. So we'll skip past that. But the main focus of this approach and also the book, The Undercover Edge, is what I've done is take the main components of undercover work, which are observation, adaptation, and communication, and I've modified them to work in any environment. So whether it's at school or at home or at work, you can use the same skills and techniques that I learned while working undercover in your own life and hopefully have the same type of success. And what it really entails is developing your ability to go into any situation, observe your environment and the people in it, develop individual profiles on those people, because the big mistake people make is grouping people together. Every single person is different. Every single person has different outside factors affecting the way they behave. And it's your job to understand your target and develop a profile that's specific to them so that you, the second thing is, can adapt your delivery. Stay within yourself, but adapt your strengths, your weaknesses to that individual, so that your delivery is on par with what you are trying to convey, and then communicate, which is a third thing, communicate with them in a way that they're receptive to what you have to say. So if you're adapting your approach, whether you're in a management position or it's a colleague that you're working side by side, if you understand what makes them tick, what motivates them, why they do the things they do, you can frame your directions or your questions in a manner that they'll be more willing to listen to what you have to say and do what you ask of them while feeling like it's advantageous to them. And if they feel like it's advantageous to them, they're not only going to perform more effectively, they're going to perform more efficiently because they feel it's a benefit to them. And that's what we're really trying to talk about here. There's a lot of approaches out there, successful entrepreneurs, CEOs, they've all written books. But what I think makes this approach effective is not because it's necessarily better, but because it's unconventional and it's different. And I think a lot of people are always looking for something to change the game up a little bit, a change of pace. And I haven't seen a book like this And that's why I decided to write it, because I feel the reason it fits is because it's different than what's already out there.
Yeah, you're right. There are a lot of self-help books and motivational books out there. And when I got your press release from your publicist several months ago, I thought to myself, huh, this sounds like an interesting, intriguing approach to how to be successful in life. And I would imagine when you're dealing with being an undercover detective like you were, you're actually dealing with survival. And so the techniques that you have to apply in that situation are life and death, and you have to know that these are tried and true techniques. And I think that so often as human beings, we just kind of throw spaghetti against a wall. We're like, oh, well, that approach didn't work. Let me try this. Or, you know, that person doesn't like me. Tough luck. It's their problem. But if you can actually learn how to work within the confines of other people's designs and do it in a way where both people are empowered, it's a win-win for everybody.
Yeah, you're nailing it. And the first thing you said there was probably the most important part, because when I go and speak at different engagements and different keynotes, one of the early things I say is, listen, guys, I'm not just preaching this to you. I practice it every day. And think about something for a second. When I say I would bet my life on this approach, on these techniques, I have literally done it. And you just said it. Like, when I'm undercover, in many circumstances, if I'm discovered or if I fail to accomplish my personal mission, I could be hurt or killed. And so, like you just said, there is no failure. These have to work. And I don't know how many of your listeners are going to get the opportunity to go undercover in their own lives or to have training from the DEA and the FBI and learn the psychological aspects of someone's behavior when they're feeling a particular way. I put that all in a book, and I put it in my presentation so that we can be more concise with it. And I've also taken, I went back to school and got my graduate degree in business. And the reason I did that is because I wanted to expand my knowledge and find ways to adapt what I learned in law enforcement to, in business applications. And you can only do that by understanding what it entails. And I haven't necessarily worked at a Fortune 500 company, but I consider myself an entrepreneur now. I work for myself, and I travel, and I speak, and I have my show. I produce the show Breaking Homicide. So I've done a lot, and I'm working for myself. But in the business that I'm in now, dealing with agents and networks and producers and all that stuff, it might be a different environment, but it's the same techniques. I haven't changed anything. And that's kind of where I went with this. And I know it's going to work, because I've been in situations where there was a lot more on the line and I came out on top. And that's what I'm trying to convey to the readers, to the listeners, to people who come and hear me speak. I know it works, and I know it because I'm still here talking to you.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I know one of the other things you and I had talked about prior to the show was self-awareness and how self-awareness plays into how we do interact with other people and our success or failure thereof. So what would you say to anybody listening out there about self-awareness and how that can impact your success or failure in any endeavor in life?
Right. I mean, self-awareness, again, I'm a realist. You may have people going, oh, I have to be aware of what I am and who I am. Wow, that's a real game changer, right? But it's such a commonsensical thing, but so many people overlook it. And they always start focusing on what's ahead instead of taking the time to develop a solid foundation. You know, you can build the nicest house you want, but if it's built on a crappy foundation, the house isn't going to last. So you have to start with a concrete settlement to sit on and say, this is who I am. This is my strengths. This is my weaknesses. This is what motivates me in life. And align yourself in situations that are in line with what you want to accomplish. And it's easy to talk about your strengths, right? We don't have to go too deep into that. You know what you're good at. Focus on those things, continue to improve them. But it's almost more important to understand what you're not good at or where you have some flaws, because you need to embrace those flaws. Because if you do that, you have a lot of people in life who will either deny or make excuses for their flaws. They'll say, hey, listen, I don't see what you're seeing. Or they'll say, hey, I'm this way because. Well, that's the wrong approach. What you really need to be doing is saying, hey, listen, this is what it is. Now I have to find ways to improve it. That's step number one. And also, understanding your strengths and your weaknesses will allow you to exceed in what's the best way for you. Because what other people will do is see how someone else is succeeding, what approach they're using. And they'll try to adapt the same approach, thinking that's the method to success. And what people have to understand is that there's no predetermined way to be successful in all endeavors. You have to find what works for you. And that starts with understanding who you are. And if you can do that, it'll allow you to better present yourself to your target. And when I say target, as we talk today, your target could be a person, place, or thing, whether it's a person you're trying to communicate with at work or at home, or an organization that you're trying to get hired by. And to dive into that aspect of it a little bit, let's take an interview for an example, okay? When you're applying for a job, most people would go into a job and they're going to highlight their strongest attributes, right? They're going to sit there and they're going to tell the employer what they're good at and how they could benefit their company. There's nothing wrong with that. I would take it a step further and maybe a little different angle. We talked about profiling your target a little while ago, right? Understanding who you're in front of. Well, for me, if I was applying for a job interview, I would go beyond what the job entails. I would research that company. I would look up their mission statement. I would find out who their CEO is. I would find out what they invest in, what their core values are. What are some of their philanthropic efforts? Once I understand all aspects of that company, I can see what's within myself that's in line with their values. So instead of highlighting my strongest attributes, I'll highlight what's in line with what they find valuable. Because it's not what I find valuable, it's about what they're looking for. And by doing that, even though it may feel like you're not concentrating on the things you're best at, you're actually focusing on things that are more important to them, which I think increases your possibility of being hired. And that applies to any set of circumstances, whether it's applying for a new job or trying to get promoted at a job you're already in.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. I see it happen so often when people go into interview is that they say what they think is relevant from their perspective, and they don't take that moment to sit and to see things from the other person's perspective. And I think the hot, catchy word that everybody is throwing around right now is emotional intelligence, but it's not just about emotional intelligence. It's about interacting and knowing your environment and interacting with that environment at a higher state of being. I think that we so often just kind of live in a reactive way where we just react to circumstances. We step foot in an interview and we react to a question that somebody throws at us, and we may react well, we may react poorly, but anytime you're reacting, you're coming from an animalistic lizard brain sort of a place versus what you're suggesting, Derek, which I love, and I'm sure there's more of this in the book, which we'll tell people where to find it later, is that you're suggesting a proactive approach. You're suggesting, instead of just going out there and being like, you know, a pinball machine, just bouncing from one to another, to actually choose the direction you want the ball to go in and choose how you're going to respond to the questions rather than just allowing them to happen to you.
Right. You're nailing it. Exactly. And it's one of those things where improvisation and adaptation are incredible traits to possess. But like you just said, you can go into an interview where the interviewer feels like they're the one asking the questions. But if you already know what you're going to say and you kind of have a read on who they are as a company, the secret is that you're actually in the driver's seat and you're controlling the interview, and you can take it as further. And again, this goes into the book and we could be on the phone for 3 hours, but you can also adapt your approach and your delivery during that interview by understanding the behavioral cues that the viewer is displaying while you're answering. So you can gauge whether you're keeping them on the hook or if you're losing them based on some of the traits they display, both verbally and physically. And that's a whole different layer and dimension to communicating with people around you, in addition to the proactive approach you just, you know, talked about. But yeah, absolutely. You can be in the interview thinking they're grading you, but in all actuality, you're grading them as well.
Yeah, I love that. Well, I want to backtrack there for a moment, Derek, because what you just touched on, I think, is such a salient point. I don't want to skip over it. So when you're talking about, for anybody out there who might not be familiar with what you're talking about, I'm going to put out there that I think what you're referring to is people's body language to the things that are unsaid during the interview. Can you give us some examples of what you might be looking for if you can tell that you're losing somebody in an interview? In other words, you're losing their interest and their attention.
Right. Well, with any interview, with any interaction with anyone, I'll start by telling your listeners this. Anyone who comes on your show or anywhere else and says, you know what, if a person displays this behavior, they're automatically feeling this way. They're full of it, because every person is different. Every person is different. And a character trait or a personality trait that I display may be different than what you display, and it may have two different meanings. So the first thing you have to do with any interaction with a person is develop a baseline. And depending on how much time you have beforehand, which it may not be much in an interview, you have to kind of get a brief overview. How is this person when you first meet them? Are they making eye contact? Are they someone who is more enthusiastic and excited by the interview? Are they energetic and high-pitched in their voice and very, you know, wanting to hear what you have to say, and their posture is upright and their hands are moving and they're active and they're someone who is very into what you have to say when you first meet because they're meeting you for the first second. However, as the interview progresses, you see them slouched. They're looking at their phone. They're looking at their pen. They're looking off in the distance. They're looking beyond you. They're breathing differently. Their eye movement is different. Their hand, their feet movement is different. They're bladed to you instead of standing directly in front of you. Their voice, their tone and inflection has changed. It can go one way or the other, because you can also have someone who, when you first meet them, because it's an interview, they're monotone. They're trying to remain impartial. Hey, how you doing? My name is John. I'm nice to meet you. Going to be conducting this interview today. Let's get started. And as you start talking about things, you catch their attention on something. You've seen them lean forward, just a slight lean forward. A lean forward would be an indication that they're open and listening to what you have to say. If their shoulders are back, they're receptive to what you're saying. If they're making eye contact the entire time, they're listening to your mouth move and they're hearing what you have to say. If they're asking questions in between your statements, that means they're actually being responsive and reactive to what you have to say. So based on your preliminary baseline of what you developed for that person, it's now changed, and you want to continue on whatever you're saying because you've hooked them. I'll tell you a quick story. Everyone always asks me how I got casted on Big Brother on the first attempt, because a lot of people apply for the show and it'll take 4 or 5 attempts before they get hired. Or how did I get hired as a 20-year-old kid when it was my first interview I had ever done for a job? And honestly, the truth is exactly what I just said. When I went into Big Brother, or I went into the police department, I had an idea of what I thought they wanted me to say. Again, you want to stay authentic, but you want to highlight things that they find valuable. So when I went on to Big Brother, I could have sat there and talked about, you know, I'm a father, I love my kid and my wife, and, I like to keep my yard update, but I knew that wasn't going to entice them. So what did I do? When I walk into this room, there's like 30 people. They all have their notebooks. These are high network executives. They're seeing 100 different people that day. They could care less about me, right? When I first sat down, I had half the room looking at their notebooks and their cell phones, half the room, hands down. And they started asking me to tell me about myself because they had no clue who I was. And when I started telling them that I was 20, I was 30 years old, I had went undercover for 3 years. And I was like, I actually am glad I'm getting this opportunity because I just had a hit put on me and my family a year ago. And I didn't know if I'd be here. Guess what, wow. Jennifer? Everyone lifted their head up. Because now I got their attention, because they're like, what is this? And I started telling that story. And then once I got them hooked, I knew that they were enticed by something that they haven't heard from the other interviewees, which is my law enforcement background. So what did I do in that interview? I highlighted experiences that I had as a cop. I stayed away from my business degree and stuff like that because I knew they didn't care about that. They wanted to hear about the sexy stuff, the undercover stuff. And ultimately, they casted me right off that audition, right on the spot. Same thing with the police department. I knew what they were looking for. They were looking for someone who represented the community, who wanted to benefit the people that live there, and who wanted to represent the people who were living there, which was someone like myself. So I talked about how I attended, the school in that city and how I worked at the Parks and Recreation Department. And I highlighted things that they looked for. I didn't go in there and say I was a good shot or that I wasn't scared of the bad guys. They wanted community relations. So that's what I highlighted. And I could tell by the way they were reacting to what I had to say, the head nods, the eye movement, the responsiveness to my statements, and how quick they were to highlight those attributes and then say, can you elaborate on that? They wanted to hear more. I knew I was on the right path, so I stayed in that lane. And that's what I'm expressing to your listeners and saying, if you're responsive to the verbal cues and the physical cues that you're receiving throughout the conversation, and they may be very subtle, if you're able to pick up on them and identify them, which I lay out a lot of it in the book, you can adapt your delivery right in the middle of whatever conversation you're having to stay right in the lane that you need to be to get where you want to get to.
Yeah, brilliant. That you've given our listeners so much, Derek, but one more thing I want to be sure that we have time to cover today, because I know it was a topic that you and I discussed and is so important for anybody out there, is failure. Should failure ever stop you? Tell me what your thoughts are on failure.
listen, I'm laying out a lot of different things today about these new kind of weird approaches to dealing with people that may be unconventional for some of your listeners. And regardless of what approach you take on, whenever you try something new, whenever you push yourself, there's going to come a point where you fail. And anyone who works out knows that failure is a part of personal growth. When you go to the gym, you don't just do however many reps you feel safe with. You push yourself to the point of failure. And the reason you do that is to gauge where you currently are as opposed to where you want to be. It's the only way to determine your current circumstance. And what I would implore to your listeners and to anyone who's ever come hear me speak or read the book is do not fear failure, because failure is where the lessons are. Failure is where what teaches you where you are today and where you want to be tomorrow. So take failure and use it as a learning tool. That's the benefit of failure, is evaluating your current circumstance and what you can do to get to where you want to be in the end.
I love that. Yeah, because failure is something that I think as human beings, we are all going to fail at things. And I know I've made my share of failures in the past too. Gosh, the first consulting company I opened up before I created a staffing firm, I didn't feel comfortable taking money from individuals, but from companies, I had no problem. So I had to really go back, re-strategize, and then reinvent myself, my brand, and my company. But if I had given up, I would have never had the experience of having my own staffing firm for 8 years and getting to make a difference and having the show. And same thing with writing a book. When I first started writing my first book, and I would love your two cents on this as well, I started off writing a totally different book. Mark Victor Hansen was my writing coach. Yeah, it was like it starts off looking one way. And Mark Victor Hansen told me, I was working on this book about, do you have what it takes to be a six-figure success? And I was interviewing people who made $100,000 or $1 million from around the world. And he said, Jen, you have nothing to sell that book based on. You have no brand. Nobody knows you. He said, you have to start with a book that kind of gets their feet wet, that gets people to kind of know who you are a little bit. And then once you've established yourself, that's when you can go. So I basically had to throw away probably hundreds of hours worth of interviews I had done with executives and all sorts of extraordinary, even celebrities. I did an interview with Joseph Gordon-Levitt that never made it to the first book that I did because it just wasn't relevant. And but then you have to start all over and go, okay, I'm going to dust myself off and try again, right?
Right. Absolutely. And you just said it right there too. I mean, listen, success is great. We all strive for success, and there's no better feeling than accomplishing your goals. But if you're really set on becoming the best person, the best professional that you can become, failure is where you're really going to learn the things you need to learn in order to progress, in order to evolve. When you're successful, you get complacent. And you get stuck in whatever way you're in. And only in failure will you reevaluate your current set of circumstances and what you can do to not repeat that same mistake that occurred in the past. That they're constant tools that you put into your brain, and they'll be there for the future to know, I've seen this situation before and I know how to handle it, and this is the way to get it done.
Yeah, and the same is true of job interviews or any circumstance, whether it was that you were terminated or fired from a position, or perhaps you go into an interview and you find out that you were passed upon or that somebody didn't like you for this reason or that reason. Get curious. See if you can dig deeper. And be open and receptive to the feedback, because I think so many of us, we say we want feedback. Oh, well, yes, please. I want to learn and grow. But then when you're actually confronted with somebody saying something that could be dark and not pretty and ugly about yourself, are you actually willing to open your ears and close your mouth and listen to what the person has to say about it? Or are you just going to keep doing more of the same thing because it's what's comfortable for you?
It's almost like you've maybe breezed through the book a little bit, because it's funny. One chapter is called You Have the Right to Remain Silent, But Listen. And there's a subsection to that chapter called Feedback is Your Friend. And I'm not going to repeat what you just said, because you just said it perfectly. It's about being receptive to the feedback that you're getting and making adjustments based on that feedback. Because if you're closed off to it, you may be missing important cues that could be the difference maker between you being promoted or someone else.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And again, it happens so often that it's just fail with, there's some great quote out there about fail fast forward, something about that, because it's the more you fail, the more you're going to expand. It's like with every failure, like you said earlier, if you go out and if everything always goes smoothly for you, you're going to have no resistance. And without resistance, something can't grow. You know, a seed can't grow without the resistance of the soil and different things. It's what makes wine great. I'm a huge wine person and just got back from Sonoma, so it's on my mind. But, you know, sometimes like the crappiest soil, where it's almost rocky and awful. Like if you go to parts of France or other parts of the world, the terroir is awful and it's rocky and it's it seems unfertile. And yet all of a sudden, the vines that grow out of there produce the most delicious, wonderful grapes because they've really had to fight to get the nutrients that they needed. Right. Was that a horrible analogy? Right. Did that make sense?
No, it's actually great because what you're saying is the vines that survived the adversities of whatever they faced to grow to that, to the grow to the fermentation needed to be a wine, they were obviously the strongest of the bunch. It's almost like natural selection, right? And that's what survived. And because of it, that's the way, that's the best tasting wine because it was the strongest of the bunch. It was the one that was able to adapt to whatever it faced and ultimately became the wine you were drinking.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of people don't know this, but like if you go to Napa, oftentimes the cheaper wines that you find or the less flavorful wines are the ones that grow on the flat ground. And it's the ones that grow up the sides of these perpendicular mountains that have the best fruit. And so I think it's a good analogy for people. So Derek, tell our listeners, what are a couple things? What are one or two, maybe three points that you would love anybody out there who's tuning in today or later down the road, what would you love them to walk away with today?
Wow, that's a loaded question. I will say this. You have to start from the foundation. Understand who you are. Understand who your target is. Understand your objectives. And this is what I'll say. As you go through life, as you figure out who you are, we talked about a lot today. You're going to figure out yourself. You're going to figure out your target. You're going to develop a personal ops plan to accomplish your mission. And you're going to understand that when you're standing in front of someone, it's not only about what you're saying, it's about what they're displaying. So both are equally important. I would even suggest that what they're displaying is more important because you can always change what you're saying. And as you're going through all this, you will encounter mistakes. You will encounter failures. But through all of this, this self-awareness, this ability to have a visual understanding of what you want to accomplish, understanding that failure is a part of living, it creates confidence. And that confidence will lead to you going into any situation, regardless of the environment, regardless of who you're surrounded by, with the understanding and the belief that regardless of who you're put in front of, you'll be able to observe the situation correctly and identify your target. You'll be able to adapt your delivery and approach to be more respectful and more appropriate for whatever situation you're in. And you'll be able to communicate with the people that you're speaking to in a way that they'll be receptive to what you have to say, allowing you to accomplish whatever goal you set for yourself. And that's the undercover edge.
I love that. So speaking of the undercover edge, please tell anybody out there tuning in where they can find the book, where we can tune in and watch your latest television show, which I believe is airing. Did you tell me it was in April that it's airing?
April 15th. Yeah. So The Undercover Edge is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, basically all the big stores, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million. I would probably say Amazon is your cheapest price right now. They're always the best prices. I know the stores don't like hearing that, but you know,
I
don't care about where you get it. But Amazon is a great place to get it. You can get it in hardcover right now. If you do buy it and you enjoy it, please review it, but also send it to me. I'd love to sign it for everyone. I have it posted on my website, officialderek.com. And as far as the show, if you're into true crime and you kind of want to see me using a lot of the behavioral techniques that I use in interrogations on the show with interviews with witnesses, family members, and some suspects, you can tune into the show. It's called Breaking Homicide. It premieres April 15th, and we're going to be working 6 cold cases from around the country. I travel all the way to Hawaii for one of them, and I'm interviewing and talking to people every day, and I'm using a lot of the skills and techniques that I talk about in the book and the same techniques that I apply every day in life. So I think it's proof of concept again, and it's just showing everyone that I'm not only I'm practicing what I preach, and although I'm putting it in a book, I'm also applying it every day for myself. So if you're looking for proof of concept, look no further than me every day. And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram. I have that stuff too. Derek L is my Twitter, and Derek Levasseur is my Instagram.
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember you told me to check out your commercial for the upcoming show on your Twitter. I think it's available on your Twitter feed. And it's you know, not a huge TV watcher myself, but I really liked it. It seemed like it would be a really great show. So I encourage our listeners to check that out.
Investigation Discovery.
Yeah, that's on Discovery. Yeah. So thank you again for joining us today, Derek. And as always, thank you to everybody for tuning in out there. And thank you to our sponsor of today's show, Markham Search, executive recruiters throughout the United States with offices on both coasts. And tune in next week. Next week, we have Dr. Paul White, who was on the show last year, and we enjoyed him so much that we've invited him to come back and join us again to talk about the languages of appreciation in the workplace. Learn how to better appreciate your staff if you're a manager, your peers or your colleagues, and how to be more appreciative and a stronger communicator overall. If for any reason you missed any part of today's show, you can always find it immediately available after the show on LA Talk Radio under the Get Yourself the Job page. The show is available for download in the archives section, or you can also find it on iTunes later in the week under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. We invite you to like us on Facebook on our Get Yourself the Job page and to leave us any questions or comments on any of the sites that I've suggested. So thank you again for joining us today, Derek, and wishing everybody out there a wonderful week.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.